All right, so welcome everybody to the latest edition of a podcast in need of a name. And yeah, joining us tonight we have Drunk Mirth, his cousin Sober Mirth.
No, that's not true. Somewhat less intoxicated than normal Mirth.
So Tipsy Mirth.
Yeah, we'll call it that.
Okay, we'll go with Tipsy Mirth, whose cousin Sober Mirth occasionally helps out with some IT stuff and plenty of bullshit and useless posts, right?
That's my specialty, yes.
Yes, it is. And we also have with us our very own Suicide Kitty Banzai Cat, our good buddy Michael, who's well-stocked treasure trove of archive articles keeps us in Throwback Thursday content for a while here. So, howdy, Michael.
Hey. Is that what TBT means? I didn't even know that.
Dude, seriously? Oh. Like, Throwback Thursday has been a thing for years.
I never really know what that meant.
Have another beer. I'll bet Drunk Mirth knew what it meant.
Your brain, bro.
Yeah.
No,
all right.
I actually really didn't care what it meant. I just kind of was like, what the hell does that mean?
Well, on TBT, the theory... On the theory of you learn something new every day, if we can hurry up and teach Mirth something else, he could sleep through tomorrow.
No, freaking millennials, man.
Millennials. Those are very enjoyable, those TBT things, which apparently means Throwback Thursday.
So. Yes, that would be what it is, which is why we do them on, you know, Thursdays and all. So,
oh, I'm kind of making that connection now, totally. Yeah. Drop on Thursdays.
It's the Illuminati's fault. All right, so... Wow.
Timing is really everything.
We're sort of switching up our intro question a little bit with new podcast comes new ways of doing things. And so here's a question. Michael, you're going to have to mull this over a little bit, so I'm going to start with Mirth. What was the last game you sold?
Me?
Yeah, what was the last game you sold?
I don't think I've ever sold the game.
Yeah?
I'm completely serious when I say that.
I'm glad he heard that correctly. He didn't think I said last game he stole. So.
Well, that confused the hell. It's like, sell a game? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I suppose
I've been on like a 10-year binge of buying stuff. I can't even imagine that I would sell. That's like, I would sooner sell a child.
Well, you've only got two of those to work with, so.
Yeah. Well, I could probably get a good price, but they are attractive children. So,
so you seriously have never sold or unloaded one of your, well, not unloaded because you probably unloaded a couple here and there, but have you traded one off for something else at some point?
I honestly don't believe I actually still have original Xbox games like from 2000 whenever. Sitting on a shelf that I have never sold. Board games, I mean, I have my Axis and Allies game from friggin' 1980, whatever, 990. I'm actually trying to think about, like, so I had a friend of mine who I bought Terrain from, and he kind of scammed me into giving it back to him. And I did get something in trade for that.
Okay.
That's probably the closest that I've come. Like, but I've never sold a board game. I buy them all the time. I've never sold a single one.
Which is why you have a mountain of unopened GMT stuff in the dining room, huh?
Oh, well, yeah, no. I could show you the pictures. It's still in the shrink. So I'm happy to announce that Holland 44 is out of the shrink.
He hasn't opened the box yet. He just took the shrink wrap off of it.
No, I just took a shrink wrap off. No. So I get carried away. I mean, I actually just started. So I have the Mets game at any cost. So I have that. I just recently started punching that, which I'm very excited about.
Have you clipped it yet?
I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah. Let's just move on to BC and talk about what he's been.
But see, here's the problem with BC is that he just went through that pre-move purge where he unloaded a whole bunch of stuff. So, mm-hmm. So I'm curious if he actually remembers.
That's much what he actually sold, because I'm not sure he sold all that much.
Or if he just told his wife, "Hey, honey, I tried to sell them."
I probably sold about half of what I owned, but I still have about 12 medium-sized heavy-duty boxes back home that are full of friggin' board games.
Yeah, the thing is, you selling half of what you owned is like Bill Gates giving away half his fortune. He's still really damn rich.
So. Yep. And that didn't stop me from buying like 6 or 7 damn games since I've been here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, apparently yeah. Quite well on the GMT sale recently.
No, I just got one off of that. I could have done worse, but I was, yeah. And it finally shipped. It should be here tomorrow, actually. I'm looking forward to that.
Well. Yeah. Thanks to the magic of time travel and the amount of time it takes me to edit and post these things, by the time your game has arrived, it will have been 2 weeks in the past of people listening to this. So
no, but I still might not even have it out of shrink by then, too. So
oh Lord, we know that. We'll be on Mirth might open Holland 44 before you actually get shrink off yours.
Whoa, yeah, let's not get too ahead of ourselves here.
So
what'd you say?
I might actually have it punched by then.
Oh, punched. We have it rounded, too? Have all the counters rounded?
Well, if I'm going to punch, I'm going to round it. I mean, that's what I mean.
Well, there you go. All right. Poor Barth.
Yeah, sort of does them at the same time. So
let's do a shameless plug for the Oregon Laminations counter trimmer.
Yeah, we should get some. I do, too. I got a 3mm. I love it.
I have the 2.5 mil, which I love, and I'm also going to acquire the 2 mil and the 3 mil at some point.
Do they
do that?
Do they make those in both left-handed and right-handed models?
Yeah, absolutely. Buy all six. That's what I recommend.
I believe it is ambidexterous.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, honestly, you know, I was thinking about this. I think the last game that I sold was the copy of Panzerleader I shipped to Mirth.
Oh, yeah, right. I paid you for that.
Yes, you actually did pay me for that. And then for some reason, like 2 weeks later, one of the games shipped to you. I don't know what you were thinking.
I got them. I know. That was a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea what it was you were thinking there. But yeah, I think
I owe Barth a copy of one. Like, I think I promised to sell him. I own so many copies of that now.
I think you were going to meet him at Origins and hand it over.
Yeah, I don't think I made that promise. But
So the last thing I think I sold, honestly, was that copy of Panzerleader. And before that, it was probably a couple of things in the auction at Buckeye Game Fest where I picked up a whole bunch of stuff from Avalanche Press when they were having a ridiculously good sale on things that sounded really good. And then I opened them up, and some of the maps were just god-awful painful to look at. And I just – there's no way I'm playing these. Just on principle and went and unloaded them. I don't care how well those games might have played. I couldn't stomach trying to use those maps that looked like they were a Photoshop project from a 7th grade graphic design class.
Well, on top of that, they were probably not accurate either. So,
well, maybe not. I couldn't stand to look at them long enough to decide. So I just punted I'm pretty sure I at least made my money back, because when you put something out at, like, you know, a game convention flea market or something, and it's MSRP of $40, but you're willing to let it go for $25, but you only paid $20 for it when it was on the sale from the store, from the company, you know, none of the money that I made from selling those games left that convention, right? I mean,
of course not.
It left in other games. But it didn't leave in that in you know, cash in pocket at all. So,
I don't
just
want to cause problems for anybody, but if it comes to Avalanche Press, if it's not like $4.99, then I'm not buying it.
Yeah, probably not. So Michael, I know you were unloading a bunch of stuff in preparation for the big move. What were some of the things that you did actually manage to sell?
Well, to be clear, I didn't unload any of the review copies that I've acquired over the years. I'm not good with selling shit that I've gotten for free. But I bought more than my share of games over the years. Some of it was really difficult for me to let go of, like my Milton Bradley series. I had to get rid of my Axis and Allies and my Fortress America and Shogun. And yeah, but they're just too big. And I'm moving to a smaller place and there's just not enough room for it. And truth be told, I'm probably going to have to figure out a way to get rid of the ones that I haven't sold. I mean, I still got quite a few that I bought, and I've, you know, all the ones that I've gotten for free for review purposes, I'm going to probably need to find a way to give them away to local gaming clubs if there's anything like that out here. So yeah, that was the hardest part, was getting rid of those Milton Bradley. But, you know, to be honest, I'm probably not going to be playing those anytime soon. I did break out the Fortress America, and I was kind of toying with the idea of doing an AAR when all of this kind of broke out in mid-August or so, this whole move thing. So yeah, that was kind of painful. But I mean, all of it was still in great condition. I think I was missing one of the swords from Shogun, so that was, and it's not samurai swords, this is Shogun, this is the original one from 86 or 87 or so when it was sold. The only one I was missing was Broadside and Boarding Parties, and man, I really wish I had held on to that somehow, because that was easily my favorite out of the bunch. So yeah, all those, I got rid of my Memoir 44 collection. I still got some extras from that that I did not sell because I had gotten them for free from the publisher back in the day when I had done articles on them, and I wasn't too comfortable with getting rid of those. Gosh, I mean, I'd have to go back through my list. I made a whole list of things that I sold and the prices I got for them, and all that money's pretty much gone now because it was facilitated me getting over here and establishing myself, which came in great, great handy to do. Some other things that I kind of regret getting rid of are like my Marvel Dice collection, Marvel Dice Masters. My daughter promised me she wanted to play that with me, so I kind of overdid it on that, but we never did play it, and I just had tons and tons of these damn dice that I just never used, so got rid of those. I had a tower that I was storing them in, like one of those little cheap plastic drawer towers that you can get from Walmart. Can't think of really anything else. A couple years ago, I had done a forum post on that other site about a gamer flea market that I'd gone to, and I had brought most of my collection that I had bought there, and I had gotten rid of several big ticket items like Battle Masters, the original Battle Masters game, and several other real classic ones that was really hard to get rid of too. But yeah, it's been kind of a painful process, but ultimately it's just me asking myself, when am I ever going to really break these out and play them? The ones that I brought with me, I really wanted to get to, but it's been, gosh, what's it been, almost 3 months now, and I've only broken out a couple of games, and I've got one on the table next to me here. I think that was one of my problems, was not having a dedicated gaming space where I'm living. So I finally went to Walmart and bought a folding table, a 4-foot one, and now I've got a game of Elder Sign laid out on it. Not exactly a war game, but I'm working on an article for that, as you know, Brant. Maybe it'll actually be out by the time this goes live, right?
You're such the optimist.
I'm not getting carried away there.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually done 2 days, which is basically a turn for all four players. It goes by the day, and I've already got a way that I want to communicate it. Brant's aware of it. I don't want to give anything away, not that there's huge secrets or anything like that, but I think it'll be an interesting way of reporting an AAR. And Mirth is in it, and so is Brant. And I don't know if you want me to go further than that, Brant.
Nah, we're good.
Okay. All right, I probably shouldn't even said that. But anyway, the two of you are definitely in it, because we're going to have some fun with this. But anyway, I kind of went off track there. Sorry, I'm just babbling.
Yeah, because that never happens with a podcast. So, yeah, I'll tell you, when I moved back to North Carolina, I moved back down here in October, and the family wasn't moving down here until June. And so I was actually – I had my father-in-law's RV out here, and so I was living in the RV for about 8 months. Which of course was a great joke around the office, because, you know, I was living in the van down by the river. This wasn't like a VW camper with a pop top or anything. This was a 40-foot RV with a separate bedroom in the back and a couch that pulled out, and had my own desk in there, and, you know, the DirecTV and all that stuff going in there. So it was a studio apartment that I didn't have to furnish, which was great. And I didn't have to deal with utilities. It was just paying the hookup costs. So it was perfect for what I needed. And so that's what I did. And, And so I brought a handful of game stuff with me, figuring that it's just me. I'll have some time to get some stuff on the table there. And the table in there wasn't that big, but it was big enough for, you know, one of the old SPI Folio series games, like the old Quad series games or something. It was big enough for one of those to be able to sit down and game. I didn't, is really what it came down to. I hardly ever actually got any games to the table. And that was a little frustrating. I was a little bummed. But it was, much like you said, whole bunch of games, every intentional playing stuff, read a handful of rules, hardly ever actually got anything on the table. Yep. Now part of that was we did have the office that I was working at had a whole bunch of gamers there. And so we were regularly playing things at lunch there, but there weren't a lot of war games. There were a lot of Euro games, because you can fit those within a 1 hour lunch break. But it was, like you moved, brought a bunch of stuff with me, every intention of playing them never actually happened. And it wasn't for lack of space. It wasn't like I was working around other people. Right.
I was going to have all this time now to friggin' do all this writing and all these reviews that I'm backed up on, and nope, it's just not happened. And it's just the kind of the reality of the situation, the living situation, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now in my case, you know, I wasn't staying with anybody. I didn't have any family there that I was staying with or anything. So it was just me. But part of the challenge that I had was just me, was no opponent there with me also. And so it wasn't for a little while yet that I actually found some regular opponents to work with. So
you just got to play with yourself, Brent. I mean,
yeah. I knew where that joke was going, right? It's not like it snuck up on anybody. By the time this will have been aired, CompassCon will probably be in the rearview mirror, but what are you most looking forward to at CompassCon?
There's actually, I'm playing in a tournament for Bitter Woods, which is the Compass Bulge game. So it is with the designer of the game, I believe, is running this tournament. At least that's what I've been sold on. So I'm pretty excited about that. I've played the game a couple of times. I'm probably going to get my ass kicked because as much as I've played it, I'm not that good at it. But no, I'm pretty excited about that. And then we have a Sunday. So that's like a Friday-Saturday thing, I think, is what we're aiming for. And then Sunday we're going to be playing Bitter Woods, which is a similar, you know, similar theme, but that is instead of West Front, that's East Front. It's the Battle of Budapest.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I got like a bitter weekend lined up. Bitter this and bitter that. No, I'm pretty excited. These are games that I've played a couple of times. I love Compass games. I'm looking forward to getting my ass handed to me by people that know the games better than I do. So.
Yeah, we are definitely shills for Compass on a regular basis. Whether talking their games or that awesome catalog that they send out. Did you get, well, Michael, I know you didn't because you moved. Chris, did you get your fold-up Compass Games catalog?
Oh, I have it here right in front of me. I love it.
It is a wondrous thing, isn't it?
No, them sending out a printed catalog is pretty awesome, actually. And yeah, they've been on a roll with games. I'm a huge GMT fan, have been for years. I own most of their catalog, but the stuff that Compass is putting out is pretty awesome. And I'm looking forward to going and playing their games, you know, and seeing people that are into their games. So,
lots of pictures. Take lots of pictures.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be taking pictures. I mean, for me, it's pretty easy. It's in Connecticut, so it's like 2.5 hour drive, so.
So with everything that CompassCon is offering, like obviously you're in a handful of particular games that you were interested in, what's one that you wanted to get into but either just didn't have the time or it filled up before you could grab it?
Well, one thing we did is they have a grand strategic World War I game called Balance of Powers, and I own it, and we played it with the idea of doing it at the con, but having played it, we decided it wasn't really a con game. It's just, it's too big. So I'm a little disappointed that we're not going to be doing that because like we spent some time prepping it and playing it. They have so many games. So like they have like South China Sea, which is a modern game. I would really like to get into that. They have a number of people that are showing up that like have designed the games. It's just it's too much for one weekend. I had to kind of pick and choose. So it's hard to say. I mean, I love most of their games. I could play any of them. I was kind of bummed out. We had actually scheduled the Balance of Power thing, and we're doing that, and some people had signed up for it. So we had to kind of turn them down after we had played it and decided it just wasn't enough for it.
So you were teasing them.
It wasn't going to be enough to do it. That's what we decided ultimately.
You were teasing them.
Yeah, and then we had to shoot this guy down. It was kind of sad. I felt a little bit guilty. Actually, I wanted to play it. It's just the guys that I was playing it with decided they didn't want to do it. So,
well, a pox on them. How dare they?
There's plenty of other games to play, though. And the Bitterwoods, Bitter End series, I mean, those are great games. Bitterwoods is probably, I mean, I've played several Bulge games, and Bitterwoods is fantastic. So I can't knock that. And doing kind of a tournament with that, we'll see what happens. I'm probably going to get my ass kicked once or twice and be out of it. So
It's not like the world lacks for Bulge games, does it?
No, I own several myself, and GMT has one coming out that I'm definitely going to buy. So we'll see.
What? A must-buy from GMT from you?
No, who cares? I know. I should just do a direct deposit with them.
Actually. Who saw that coming? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Michael, I know you haven't poked around too much as to what may be out there for conventions for you, but beyond the Elder Sign one that you're working on right now, what's the next thing going to hit the table for you? Let me caveat that.
What's that?
If not the actual table, what's the next one that might hit the digital table if you're going to end up using Vassal or Tabletop Simulator or something?
That's actually been more of a desert, so to speak, playing computer games. I've just not had any time at all for that. I think I've been on Steam twice in the last 2 months alone for maybe a total of 20 minutes. I don't know what my usage is, but yeah, so I constantly get emails, items on your Steam wish list are on sale. Items on your GOG wish list are on sale. I'm like, no, don't have time for that. No, delete. Unfortunately, I just can't do it. So I really want to get Corsair Leader to the table. I just got that from DVG actually just about a week ago, and I've just not had time to get into it, unfortunately. But I think Raiders from the Deep is another one. I bought that from Compass some time ago. I've just not had time to review it with everything going on.
I know Corsair Leader is solo. Raiders of the Deep is also, right?
Right. Yep, sure is. They both are. They both are very much so. The Raiders from the Deep is, of course, Compass Games' solo game of World War One submarine combat where you command you're basically playing the captain of a German submarine during World War. Actually, there's rules in it too for Austria-Hungary, I believe. You can play as that and go about the Mediterranean if you want. So that game is actually quite a bit of fun. There's actually a bit of role playing to it. There's charts where you can roll up to get the history of your captain, where he was born, what year he was born in, how he grew up.
Do you die during character creation?
I really want to kind of go off and. No, it's not.
It's not Traveler.
It's not Traveler or Star Trek or, no, it's nothing like that. You don't die of old age before you even get the guy to the table. You can die.
To be clear, this is a solo game?
Yeah. Yep, it's a solitaire.
It's a solitaire game, but with the option for a whole lot of character backstory.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of options. Like I said, you cannot just do Germany. You can do Austria-Hungary as well, I believe. But I haven't done that yet. I've just played Germany several times, or German sailors. And you go out on patrol, and you roll up encounters. And the funny thing is, the game is kind of fiddly in a way, but it's not a bad thing. It really recreates the rules of engagement at the time. And it wasn't unrestricted submarine warfare like it was in World War II. There was a lot of rules. at the time, especially at the beginning of the war, where you had to basically, you had to surface and you had to fire a shot across their bow and make them stop and surrender and give them time to get off the ship. And so all of this is incorporated into the rules, and they went back and forth several times. So this started out, I think this is how the war started off, and then eventually unrestricted warfare was declared, and so you didn't have to do that crap anymore. And then suddenly it happened again, and you had to start doing it again, and then you go off the rails again, and you're back to unrestricted submarine warfare. It's kind of confusing in a way. It takes a little bit of getting used to get to that. You just kind of just want to put torpedoes into things, but it actually adds a very nice historical layer to it, and it made me aware of something that I had heard about, you know, just from reading about the war at sea during World War One, but nothing that I really took to heart or really tried to understand until I'm faced with it now. I'm like, oh crap, I gotta shoot a warning shot, I guess, across this guy's bow. I can't just put a torpedo in him. So it's kind of enjoyable in that way. But yeah, I like that game a lot. I just really need to get a review to it. I actually wanted to do an AAR for it as well, because it tells such a good story, especially if you're successful. You can get promotions and you can get medals, and it's just kind of a cool little how you stack up historically with the best U-boat aces of the time as well. There's you can actually play as them. I think they included some information on them, so you can choose to play as them if you want. Corsair Leader is yet another, or well, I'll say yet another, like they do this all the time, and it's not all that impactful. They do some great air leader type of games, and it's essentially what it is you're commanding a squadron of Marine or Naval fighters during World War II. And it's very much like any your series that they've done, like Phantom Leader or Hornet Leader, where you basically get a set number of points, you choose a campaign, and actually that campaign drives how many points you get, and you use those points to spend on aircraft and pilots and armament, and you get, depending on the length of the campaign you choose, you get a certain number of points each week. So you got this budget that you have to try to stick with. There's certain levels of success that are measured depending on how well you hit targets. But I'm really eager to get this one to the table, because you've got it's not just like playing over Iraq or any modern kind of combat like you would say for Hornet Leader or Vietnam if you're playing Phantom Leader. This is, you know, World War II stuff, and just the idea of being able to attack a Japanese carrier is, to me, is really cool, or an island base, or, you know, any of the various targets that you would have depending on the campaign you get into. So I'm really, I've already opened the shrink on that, I promise. I've looked through it. I've actually started reading the rules too, and it's you know, I've got space now finally. As soon as I get done with this Elder Sign, it's going to be either that or Raiders from the Deep. So sorry, I kind of went off on a long tangent on that, but that never happens on these things, does it?
If you hadn't already opened up Corsair Leader, then I wanted to know whose video it was that you voiced over. That we posted.
Oh yeah, that's right. Forgot I did that. That's how bad things are sometimes. I can't even remember what the hell I did last week. Yeah. I recorded it and I didn't even watch it. I just sent it to you. Yeah, but I picked it apart. I punched it. I played around with looking at it a little bit. And, you know, remember I was confused when I was looking at it, going, "What the hell are AGM-65s doing this? Why is there friggin' what are these 120s doing in here? What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
And because I thought I was thinking of that Final Countdown bit. That's, I think you asked me that, Brant, too. That
I didn't.
That,
somebody else did, but yeah.
Game, and yeah. It's actually in one of the other games that they do. So it kind of confused me. I'm surprised to see it here too, but hey, what the hell, right? I mean, you add it in. Let's see what can happen. It'd be kind of fun to maybe play that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's recreate a wacky 80s time travel movie. Why not? So,
well, that's one of my favorite movies ever. I mean, I the whole movie is kind of cheesy, granted, but it's got some really good aerial shots in it. I mean, those Tomcats mixing it up with those zeros, that's not CGI shit. That's real. You know, that's really cool to see that happen. Even I just can't imagine the thoughts that must have been going through the director's minds or the coordinator's minds as they're trying to choreograph this combat and not have a Tomcat whack a zero or vice versa go with the intake of one of them, you know. So that must have been fun.
So a brief digression here. Yes, cheesy 80s movie. Give me an 80s military movie that was not cheesy. Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, that combo. That might be it, right?
Well, those were still kind of cheesy. Those were still kind of cheesy. Those moments. I mean, that
Full Metal Jacket has had a veneer of cheese applied to it over the years as people have used the R. Lee Ermey quotes over, over the years for all sorts of other purposes. Platoon's never really been bastardized in that way. But seriously, 80s, not about the 80s, but made in the 80s, 80s military movie that was not cheesy. Iron Eagle, Uncommon Valor, Toy Soldiers.
Jesus Christ.
Huh?
Other than the stupid Sean Connery accent, that was not a cheesy movie.
Which one?
I Should Like to Live in Montana.
Hunt for Red October.
But did that come out in the 80s? I know the book was in the 80s.
Yes, it did come out in the 80s.
The movie was released in the 80s?
I saw it in IMAX.
89. It was late 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, it was about 89 because I saw it in an IMAX when it premiered at the IMAX. So, yeah,
I mean,
it was about
it. The book was 84. The movie, I think, was 89.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the book. Right? I wasn't talking about the book. I was talking about the movie.
I understand. I said the movie was 89. You said 80.
Easy, boys.
No, that's cool. No, that's a good one. That's a non-cheesy one. But
it had its moments, but that was, I mean, as far as, like, spy thrillers went, that was pretty good. I mean, if you're talking, like, Iron Eagle and shit, that was a damn good movie. Historical gold compared to that.
Iron Eagle was ridiculously high levels of cheese. So was Uncommon Valor.
Even Top Gun was terrible. I mean,
it had a great song in it.
1,000 feet. They're soaring between mountains and talking about the hard deck being that, like, are you kidding me?
Top Gun was also the first appearance of Wilson the volleyball from Castaway.
Was it really? I did not know that. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Crickets.
Great story, Brent.
Yeah.
You know, there was a comedian once that
nice
used
try,
to.
Man.
There was a comedian once that used to talk about joke grenades. Like, you'd pull the pin on the joke, but it was 8 seconds before it went off and people got it. And I have a feeling the Wilson the volleyball joke just that was a joke grenade, and it took Mirth 8 seconds to get to it.
Oh, the volleyball, the gay volleyball thing. Sorry, I'm not trying to be politically incorrect. Oh, I get it now. Oh, that's funny.
All right, so one more quick question for you guys then.
Good times.
last game you gave up on. Last game you got a couple of turns into and just said, not doing it. I'm done with this. It's not for me. And pulled the plug. Chris, last game you gave up on.
Board games. What's the GMT Queen Victoria? Well, I don't know. Is it like a
Virgin Queen?
That one definitely.
Virgin Queen's not Victoria.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I was trying to just get the context of the game. Definitely gave up on that one. Not my thing.
Not your thing. Okay.
Well, it's Virgin Queen. So
yeah, as you say, there's a virgin joke in there somewhere.
Well, let's go with that.
Michael, last game you gave up on and just pulled the plug and just it didn't connect. You gave up. You said, this isn't for me.
I'm probably going to catch some shit for this, but it would be Target for Today, definitely. I know I just pissed off a lot of people, but what can I say? I mean, the game, I had such fond memories of Queen of the Skies, and I'd even tried to go back to it and play it, but I never really had a chance to jump in. But I thought, Target for Today, that's going to be a great game. A friend of mine from high school bought it and was playing it, and he kind of convinced me that, okay, this is a good decision. I'm going to go ahead and try it. I ended up spending quite a bit of money on it, plus shipping, to get it, almost $100 total. And so I thought this was a good investment, and I get the game, and I read through it, and it's great, great components, great quality. The manuals are awesome. It's like period pieces. It's like you're looking through a manual from the time, in the typeset font and all that. It's very immersive. It's very cool, but it's it's a freaking roller coaster. You're on rails the whole time. There's no meaningful decisions to make. And I guess me as a gamer, I've evolved a little bit since the time of Queen of the Skies, which was pretty much, okay, you roll, you take off. Okay, you took off, okay. All right, so now you're flying. Oh, here's weather. Okay, great, weather. Okay, move to the next space. Oh, weather, bad guys. Yep, here comes some bad guys. Oh, wait, the fighter cover got it. Okay, never mind. Next phase. Okay, roll again. Oh, wait, here's some bad guys. Oh, nope, they got through the fighter. Okay, here they come in. Okay, roll. Oh, they missed. Oh, I missed. Oh, well, they fly off. Okay, well, that was fun. Now we're over the target. All right, roll. All right, 20% of my bombs hit. Yay, turn around. Flak, let's go through all that shit again. That's all it is. It's just, and I don't know if you guys have played that. Surely you've played Queen of the Skies, right?
It's been a long time.
You guys?
No.
You guys?
But you make that okay. Well. Your description makes that sound better.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and I know that that game's extremely popular. I just don't get it. I mean, I just pissed me off. I play it and I'm like, this is awful. So this is one of the games that I sold when I was having my moving sale, and I got a pretty good amount of my money back. Not a lot, but you know, not all of it, obviously, because I spent a hell of a lot of money on it. But I'm kind of happy that I was able to almost break even on it. But yeah, that just really upset me. I was really looking forward to this being a good game, and it was just terrible. And it kind of reminded me of B-29 Super Fortress. That one is basically a weather sim or a navigation sim. It's not really a bomber sim. It's enjoyable to a point. Hell Over Korea, the expansion definitely adds a lot more combat to it. But again, all of this stuff is basically rails. And if you're looking for a game that you want to make meaningful decisions in, you do not want to do this. It's kind of funny too, because recently on Solitaire War Games, I am a member of that group and I try to keep an eye on it as stuff pops up. There's a guy who came up with something called Evil Queen of the Skies, and it looks like an America bomber. So I think what he created was a variant for Queen of the Skies where you are piloting a German bomber trying to bomb the United States. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. That's kind of creative. I actually asked, he was handing out files for playtesting for anybody who wanted to look at it. So I actually went ahead and spoke up. I just was kind of curious what he'd done. So I wanted to look at it. I haven't had a chance to do that yet, of course, but I don't know why I did that anyway, because a lot of these games, as I said, they're all, you know, it's like the slot cars that you played with as a kid that did a figure eight, and you just kind of pull the trigger on your little gun and they just go. And they just go in a big circle, and that's all that happens, and you don't really do anything. Yeah. So anyway,
that's
over. Sorry,
that's disappointing. So the I pulled the plug fairly quickly on Decision Games' Congo Merc solo game. I enjoy reading about a lot of the 60s and 70s African bush wars. There's a lot of really interesting reading about those, some of the stories folks tell, some of the tactics and techniques that they used, where they were clearly improvising based on limited skills and abilities. Really, Congo Merc felt like sort of a bit of a whack-a-mole game where you did have some particular decisions to make. It wasn't on rails like what you're describing. You do get to sort of pick a task org and kind of figure out which missions you want to go fulfill. But the solo mechanics of kind of randomly placing some encounters around the map and then going and hit it, it felt like it was borrowed heavily from some early 80s TSR solo type games or little adventure type mini games. And I just think game design's evolved a little beyond that I was a little underwhelmed by it. And didn't get very far into it. And there's a digital adaptation of it as well. And I'll say, so the user interface in the digital adaptation is a complete train wreck. It's a real pain in the ass with all these wacky dials and non-intuitive unit icons and stuff, where that, I guess they thought they were being innovative by changing what some of the icons might be instead of just sticking with something that the user can figure out. But the computer game is a near perfectly faithful recreation of the board game, which is good if that's what your goal was, and I suspect it was for the computer game coders. They wanted to make an accurate and faithful recreation of the board game, and they did that. It's just not a board game I enjoy, and so therefore the computer game isn't something I'm a big fan of. The other one that I punted on, Nuclear Winter 68 from Lock and Load. This is one of the holdover titles that kind of came forward through the ownership change. For anybody that knows the background of kind of where Nuclear Winter 68 came from, it started out as a freebie download print and play thing on BoardGameGeek that was 100% a straight ripoff of the World at War series. And the designer didn't even try to credit where the original ideas came from. It's World at War with some wacky sci-fi storytelling around it. And
gee, where did they get that from?
Well, but so here's the thing. It was not created by Lock and Load originally. This was just some fan dude who had some wacky personal sci-fi universe out there that he had built this post-apocalyptic, you know, World War II went nuclear, and so this is the fallout of things, you know, 20 years later kind of thing.
And that, there's zombies and vampires and all kinds of stuff.
There were some mutated stuff, but there was no vampires and werewolves out there.
I was going to say, is there really?
Another
crossover in the series, I guess.
Yeah.
I was going to say, how lame.
Well, so this was a standalone thing. This was not part of, you know, any sci-fi outgrowth of something weird that happened at the end of World War II from the other continuities. This was its own standalone thing. And look, yeah. You know, to their credit, Lock and Load, you know, the old Lock and Load brought this in and said, hey, this person put a whole lot of work in here. There might be a viable game underneath all this. And lo and behold, they found what appeared to be a viable game, and they cut a deal with the kid and actually released it. And so on one hand, you've got a kid that completely ripped off somebody else's design as a little fan-made freebie kind of thing that you kind of want to get upset about, you know, what the hell are you doing ripping off somebody else's work? The flip side of it is, kid put a lot of work into it. It actually worked fairly well. And kudos to the company for saying, hey, there's a gem underneath all this. We clearly have some IP rights to all of this if we really wanted to pursue it. But why don't we see if he wants to commercialize this and we get another game in our stable? And so for a business perspective, you know, it all kind of makes sense, even though it's a little off the wall. Playing the game, I just never really settled, like, you want the backstory to matter, but the backstory just doesn't. All it is, it's World at War with some wackier unit names and some wackier counter values, but there's not a ton of anything to it that makes it really all that special, right? It's just World at War with a bunch of variant counters, and it really wasn't. When you've got something that's that much of an immersive alternate timeline type universe, you want something to sort of draw you into that story. You know, part of what draws me into a lot of the Cold War Goes Hot stories, and we've talked about this on other podcasts, is I was living in Germany in the middle of the 80s, right? If World of War 85 from Lock and Load had happened, I would have lived through it or not, right? But I mean, I was on the front lines of it. Now, like, I was a high school kid, so it's not like I was part of the fight, but I was there. That has some definite resonance to me. Whereas, you know, you want a compelling story out of this, and there just wasn't, for all of the work that had gone into Nuclear Winter 68, the story. Edit that out. The story just wasn't all that compelling, and it wasn't a lot of fun. And that was a real disappointment. You know, compare that with anything from the Dust series of games, the original Dust board game, or any of the Dust Tactics, the minis games. There's a very compelling backstory to those things, that there's a lot of good reasons why things are the way they are in the Dust universe. And it's neat. It's a lot of fun. There's a good story to be told there. The story from Nuclear Winter 68 just never resonated with me, and it at that point, the game was just sort of this weird mishmash, bad clone of what could have been a good game. So, I was a little bummed. Yeah,
that's a shame.
Yeah, well, we all have something that didn't quite work out. So, all right. So, Michael, what did you get from the GMT sale? You said you ordered something.
Yeah, Rebels, oh gosh. Hold on a second. I got to look it up. So edit this part out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chris, what'd you get from the GMT sale?
I got zilch. And note to GMT, if you're going to have a sale, have your friggin' website actually work when it comes to ordering.
Well, look.
I spent a good 2 or 3 hours trying to get an order in with them on the first day, and I got so pissed that I just gave up. And I'm a GMT whore. And I don't care whatever that's a I own a ton of their games. I own a lot of GMT games, and I'm a big fan of their products, but I got really frustrated with their website on the day, first day of that sale, so I just gave up, and I did not order anything from them.
Well, and let's...
my pennies for Compass. So
I will tell you... So GMT, the only other company that I can think of that actually invites DDoS attacks on themselves is Ticketmaster when, like, Taylor Swift tickets go on sale. You know, GMT sort of did that to themselves. You know, hey, let's...
Well, you have a huge sale like that, and you're completely unprepared for it. I mean, that's just not good PR. And I was legitimately pissed with them. I mean, I spent a good chunk of time trying to get an order in. I had 2 or 3 games that I was prepared to give them money to, and I just gave up after the first day. And after that, I wrote them off. I mean, I'll get the games down the road if I ever want to get them. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to have that, you know, be prepared to spend that money and get so frustrated that I just gave up. I mean, that's whatever. I love GMT, but that sale was a kind of a debacle.
Well, from the sounds of it, lots of people gave GMT money. So.
No, I don't fault them. I mean, trust me, I've given GMT plenty of my money. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Michael, did you find it?
Yeah, Rebel Raiders on the High Seas. I was on Amazon and I just looked it up here, and they want $107 for this game. I think I got it for $30 with shipping. So,
Do you have it yet, though? Do you actually have it yet?
No. It shipped Friday. It'll be here tomorrow, Monday. So that's at least what UPS says. So hopefully it'll be on the doorstep when I get back from work tomorrow.
And it'll be on Amazon by Tuesday for $80.
No, I'm not doing that.
I'm just messing with
you. I mean, this has got to be a third-party seller selling this for stupid $107. Give me a break. But it looked like a pretty decent game. I don't have a lot of I don't have a lot of Civil War games, especially not Civil War naval games. There was another one they did called Iron and Oak, I think, something like that, which was a tactical combat game of Civil War naval combat. But I liked this one because it was a little more strategic. And, you know, it's... Right? I think it's card driven. Yeah, and this is kind of a funny thing. The game designer is Mark McLaughlin. Is that how you say his
name? Yeah, McLaughlin.
Sure.
He didn't he write for Wargamer back in the day?
Perhaps. I knew folks by screen names.
I reached out to him.
Yeah, I knew everybody by screen names, not by real names. So.
I'm just remembering from when we went to E3 in 2003. I think he was part of the crew that went there with Wargamer back when Mario was in charge of things. I was just curious.
Sure. 2003, I remember that. Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
I remember that because I went to freaking Los Angeles and I'd never been before, so that's how I remember that. Anyway.
Yeah, you see, right. Mirth, some of us were sober in 2003.
Yeah. Well, lucky you, man. So what? BC was in Vegas and sober? That sounds pretty lame.
No, he was in LA and sober.
No, really. There was a party that Mario got us invites to. It was a NVIDIA event. It was limited to like 200 people. I really wasn't all that much into it, but he managed to wrangle a pass for me, and they were a group of Wargamer people going, so I went. It was open bar. So I remember that was my first experience with Jägermeister, which is probably better described as toothpaste.
It wasn't much of an experience.
Yeah.
Well, I remember it very well, but it didn't taste that great. But it was free. I was kind of like Farva in Super Troopers. Whatever's free. Also, Patron Vodka. I love that. That was good stuff. So I think about 10 shots in, and you got to remember this was 2003, all right? Because about 10 shots in, that's when somebody came out to this small group of people and says, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're ready for Smash Mouth. And Smash Mouth came out and played. And remember 2003. Now that's kind of lame, I guess, but maybe kind of cool today. I don't know. But back then that was like, you know, 10 shots in, you're like, holy shit. Your mind's blown. So that was quite an experience. That was a fun time. Anyway, that's sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that tangent.
You go off on a tangent every time and then tell us you didn't mean to.
Well, that's why you have me on these friggin' things.
That's the point.
I apologize. F you guys.
I'm pretty sure Smash Mouth didn't play at Origins.
No, they didn't play at Origins. Which might have been a cover band you saw, Mercer. A tribute band.
Yes.
The Mirthettes.
Smoosh Mouth.
Well, so out there in Michael's neck of the woods, there is an AC/DC tribute band that does only Bon Scott era AC/DC stuff, and they're known as BS. So. That's who they are.
They have a theme for the podcast.
They do play Origins if you want, if you can book them.
They play the Phoenix area.
We don't have a theme for the podcast, do we?
We also have a, here locally, there's a Motley Crue tribute called Mostly Crue.
So, that's pretty good.
That's actually pretty awesome.
So they stuck an S in the middle of Motley Crue. So.
I was just saying, our Andy Martin, our friend who gave us a theme song for a podcast once upon a time, he most recently finally got back into performing. I posted on Facebook. I saw a video of him playing live with his band, and I thought, oh, that's cool. I wish I'd known about that. I would have gone and checked it out. So I told him, hey, next time let me know, and I'll go check you guys out. Yeah. I don't know what they play, but he's a hell of a guitarist. He's posted himself on Facebook a few times playing like AC/DC cover.
Oddly enough, they're really playing Bon Scott era AC/DC covers.
Oh, yeah?
He's the guitarist for BS.
Oh, it is BS. Oh, that's shit. Him. Okay. Well, it shows you what I pay attention to. I had no idea. Anyway. I just saw the video and I just listened to it. I didn't pay attention to the names of it or anything. So
yeah.
Sorry about that. Anyway.
That's them. That's it.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Well, I want to check them out next time.
All right. I think we're running out of tangents upon which to digress. I think we may be, you know,
possible.
Assuming we have more than two people still listening to us, we may need to be pulling the plug here at this point.
We had two people listening to us?
Yeah. You're assuming we had two in the first place.
We've had a couple that have claimed to have been listening. So, I'm going to take them at their word and think that they might have been, so we
need to rebuild the audience to two.
Yeah. We'll get there, dude. Rome wasn't built in a day. Neither is the Armchair Dragoons, but we're working on it. So we will get there. So all of you Armchair Dragoons fans, please come find us over at the website, over at armchairdragoons.com. We ought to repeat that a whole lot more often than we actually do in the midst of all this podcast. So yeah, come find us over there. Random articles and coverage, the forums, of course, where all kinds of wacky and zany game talk and interaction. We've also got the event calendar with all sorts of upcoming conventions, club meetings, organizations, and if you know of any additional events and clubs and meetings and organizations that ought to be on our event calendar, please let us know so that we can get those added. We really want that thing to be as complete as possible. And stay tuned. We're hoping within the next couple of weeks to get a couple of games going live online where we've got some live streaming where you'll be able to tune in and watch a couple of the games that folks are playing and interact with the guys actually doing the playing. So if you got a question as to why somebody made a completely bonehead move in the middle of the game, I'll try and explain what I was doing since I'm the one who's probably made it. But other people will be able to pitch in there as well and also sound off on what they're doing.
Maybe because I'm drunk.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, people might pay money to see that.
Well, so here's the thing, Chris, I imagine your war game playing is not unlike, the guys from the movie Summer School talking about driving. The reason people are so bad at driving drunk is they don't learn to drive drunk. Like, I would imagine that would be your natural state in which you were playing the war games, and therefore that wouldn't be unexpected. Like, it would be sober mirth that would be making the dumb moves.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it as it doesn't. Let's just put it that way.
All right.
An esoteric reference to make. Wow.
Hey.
I could have pulled that quote out of my ass like that.
Yeah, that
bravo.
Was...
Bravo.
I had to reach back into my own memory.
I've seen that movie many times. I wouldn't have thought of it, but as soon as you said it, I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I remember that scene now.
So just to clarify, you guys are surprised that I'm making obscure 80s pop culture references?
No.
Okay.
Surprised that one.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
It should be kind of the norm at this point, guys. So,
I mean, see.
Let's. I mean, do we need to sit here and have an analysis of the you know reality of Iron Eagle? You know, come on.
Oh God! No. That's a whole nother cat. We can do a whole nother podcast on Iron Eagle.
We should do 80s military movies and have a little fun with that.
90s too, because we got to talk about Navy SEALs.
Ooh, Navy SEALs.
Navy SEALs in there somewhere.
That could be a double bill right there.
So long as the primary point of reference for Navy SEALs is them making fun of it in the movie Clerks. So...
Oh yeah, that's true.
All right. I think we've completely lost our audience at this point, so we're going to call it good. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate y'all dialing in here, especially on relatively short notice. This was fun. We're absolutely going to do it again. But hey, now we've got a third podcast in the tank. We need a name at some point. We'll figure it out.
Gooncast.
Yeah. I got you, Gooncast Radio, Joykey.